Welcome to the Healthy Birthing Journey podcast, a series where we explore the data behind maternal and infant health in Arkansas. And we speak to some of the people working to improve outcomes for moms and babies across our state.
Now, as a state, we have attention and resources directed towards something that is important to us all.
A lot of these things are preventable, could have been preventable in these cases. And it's not just mortality, it's also the morbidity. Moms who go home and they're not the same as when they came in.
What we hear a lot frequently from these women is, if you weren't here, we would not have gotten the care.
That was Dr. Sam Greenfield at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences. Dr. Kay Chandler, Arkansas Surgeon General, and Kelly Conroy, Director of Programs at the Arkansas Center for Women and Infants Health at UAMS. Three of the people working hard to make a difference that we'll be speaking with today. And I'm your host, Sandra McGrew, Executive Director at the Arkansas Center for Health Improvement, or ACHI. We are an independent health policy center focused on evidence-based research, public policy, and collaborative efforts to improve the health of all Arkansans. Maternal and infant mortality rates in Arkansas are among the highest in the nation, but a wide range of efforts are underway to change that. The challenge, however, isn't easily overcome. There is no single solution, no single switch or dial or program that will turn things around in a week, month, or even a year. This is a crisis requiring a multifaceted approach. Here at ACHI, we pulled our analysts and researchers together to envision what a healthy birthing journey should look like and identify points along the way where Arkansas has opportunities to make lasting improvements for our moms, children, families, and communities. We identified 9 phases or stops along the birthing journey from pre-pregnancy through delivery and into the postpartum period. In this episode, we start at the beginning of the birthing journey with pre-pregnancy preparation. But first, let's take a step back for perspective and to better understand the maternal and infant mortality crisis Arkansas and many other states are facing. For that, I sat down with Dr. Sam Greenfield, a professor of obstetrics and gynecology at UAMS, who has been leading several statewide efforts to improve maternal health in Arkansas. Dr. Greenfield earned his Doctor of Medicine from Meharry Medical College in Nashville and completed his residency in obstetrics and gynecology at UAMS in Little Rock. Dr. Greenfield, thank you so much for joining our program. Over the last few years, there have been many conversations and there's also been a lot of action to improve maternal health outcomes in our state. As we begin to explore our birthing journey here on this program, I'd like to ask you, help us set up the stage, help our listeners understand why there is so much energy that is now focused on maternal health.
Well, first, thank you for having this conversation. As a developed nation, we've had the benefit of having access and resources and quite often thinking we're having the best health care in the world. But several years ago, evidence began to emerge that, in fact, despite the advantages that we have, in fact, the United States has one of the highest maternal mortality rates compared to other developed countries. And what we began to see was an increasing trend in that number. And there had been a lot of discussion about why that number went up. Was some of it a methodological anomaly, or was some of it a true area of concern? And what we found is that, in fact, there is a true area of concern, and there was a lot of opportunity for improvement of health care. And so I think it's important that as we begin this conversation, that the definitions actually become important. Mm-hmm. What we've used in the past is a maternal mortality definition, which typically is following a maternal death up to about 42 days after delivery. But as we began to do more, we began to expand that definition out to what we would call a pregnancy-associated death or a pregnancy-related death. With a pregnancy-associated death, what we're looking at is a death at the end of a pregnancy up to 365 days. And that can be from any cause. But a pregnancy-related death is a death up to 365 days after the end of that pregnancy from some cause or events that were triggered by the pregnancy itself. And so when we see these numbers, what we see is we as a nation, not in the lead, we had higher rates compared to other developed countries. And that's really is what's been the driver of this.
And what about Arkansas specifically?
And what we found is that Arkansas, we've been at the bottom compared to other states. That has really been the driver. So back in 2018, 19, and 20, efforts were started to get a maternal mortality review committee up. And through legislation that was passed, we began the process of forming a maternal mortality review committee that I think has been foundational to a lot of the efforts within the state.
If you're looking at the risk factors, the drivers of some of these statistics that are putting us down there at the bottom for some of these rankings, what are a few that you could point to?
Well, one of the things we have is an unhealthy population to begin with. So when people are coming into healthcare and prenatal care with a lot of comorbid conditions, obesity, diabetes, and hypertension, that's one of the factors that contributes. But there are also other factors that contribute as well. Resources that are in access to care. We've seen across the state that we've had closures that create barriers to care, not only just simply having a provider, but then there are geographical barriers as well, economic barriers that exist. It's a combination of factors that actually come into play that all lead to the potential for these healthcare outcomes to be as poor as they've been.
You mentioned the Arkansas Maternal Mortality Review Committee. One of the concerning points that I learned was that 94% of pregnancy-related deaths were considered preventable. What does that mean? What are some opportunities there?
So when we talk about preventability, one of the things that people frequently think when we start the conversation of maternal mortality is who could have done what at the time of delivery? But what we're talking about is preventability, some effort somewhere along the way could have actually made a difference. There could have been a difference from the moment of conception through the pregnancy and delivery and throughout the postpartum period. So there are opportunities for prevention that exist not only from the patient and the family perspective. There are opportunities for prevention from a system perspective. There are opportunities for prevention from a provider perspective. And what we're talking about are there interventions that could have been made that are not unreasonable that could have actually made a difference in that person's health, in that person's outcome?
We touched on this just a little bit, but I want to ask this in a different way and ask specifically about the primary risk factors. Could you address some of these both for maternal mortality as well as maternal morbidity, where a mom experiences significant short-term or long-term health consequences related to pregnancy?
The concept of morbidity is really important, and I'm really glad that you brought that up. When we think about maternal mortality, that's a tragedy that everyone understands immediately. Mom passed away, and that's a tragedy not only to that family and to that patient, but to the community as well. So that's one thing. Morbidity means that mom had some type of experience through that pregnancy that while she lived, yes, there was definitely something that that person went through that was unexpected. It could have been an extended stay in the hospital. It could have been an unanticipated trip to the operating room. So the factors that contribute to it may be a number of things. We mentioned some of the chronic medical conditions that someone may have. One of the leading causes that we've seen for maternal health and poor outcomes, maternal mortality, has been hypertensive disorders of pregnancy, preeclampsia. But surprisingly to a lot of folks, it's cardiovascular disease, cardiomyopathy, and heart failure. And so when we have gaps in access to care, people are not taking advantage for whatever reason, whatever the barriers are, that there's not prenatal care. We don't recognize the condition early. We're not able to develop some method of intervention. And so these are some of the factors that contribute. When we're looking at the pregnancy-associated deaths, and with that definition, as I mentioned, those are sort of the broad concepts of death where it may not necessarily have been a medical condition that contributed, but we have to sort of discern it. Sometimes there are other factors. It may be a history of substance use disorder. It may be a lot of social determinants of health that are creating barriers to that person taking full advantage of the resources that are there, or if there may be a barrier to resources at all. They may simply not exist in some situations.
Can you explain to our listeners who may not know exactly, what are some examples of social determinants of health?
There may be housing instability. There may be barriers to access to transportation. And when we start talking about social determinants of health, it could be the mom had a hypertensive episode. She had preeclampsia. She had a bad outcome from that. As we move further back, it may be there was a lack of prenatal care. Well, why? There's no prenatal care in that region for 100 miles. Well, why didn't she go somewhere else? Perhaps she did not have funding or the resources to get there. Well, why not? Because there's no transportation. Or the transportation that is available does not necessarily allow that patient to bring children. Or it could be that they are housing insecure. So all of these things can have a compounding effect in terms of what that patient is experiencing and their ability to access and take full advantage of the care that they're needing.
I know we tend to focus on the statistics that show us ranking at the bottom of these national numbers, but can you tell us, what are some things that we are doing well right now? What gives you hope for us to make these numbers better and improve these outcomes for these moms and babies in our state?
One of the things that I find encouraging, I go back to something we would say in my family, if you want to know where somebody puts their value, see where they spend their time and spend their money. That's not unique, and I'm sure we've all heard that conversation. Now there's a conversation that is focused, and there are a lot of resources being directed to a topic. So now, as a state, we have attention and resources directed towards something that is important to us all. And that gives me hope that we have an opportunity to change the trajectory of healthcare, not just in our state, but even beyond, because I think we can be an exemplar for others if we are able to do the things that we're setting out to do. So I'm encouraged. I'm cautiously optimistic on where we're going with this.
Thank you for all the work that you've done and that you continue to do in this space. And thank you for speaking with us today.
Thank you very much.
Coming up next, we sit down to discuss the state of health for Arkansas women with Arkansas Surgeon General Dr. Kay Chandler. There are a lot of conversations happening around maternal health right now, both here in Arkansas and around the country. Everyone involved wants to find a way to ensure healthy outcomes for mothers. But let's take just a moment and agree that healthy moms begin as a healthy woman. That also means that an unhealthy woman who becomes pregnant is more likely to face a variety of challenges throughout the birthing journey. For insight into the health of Arkansas women, we're joined by Dr. Kay Chandler. Dr. Chandler was appointed as Arkansas Surgeon General by Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders in 2023. But her focus on maternal health began decades earlier. She's been caring for women and mothers in Arkansas for some three decades as an OBGYN at Cornerstone Clinic in Little Rock. She is a graduate of Hendricks College and received her medical degree from the University of Texas Southwestern Medical School in Dallas, Texas. She completed her residency training at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences. I'd like to begin our conversation with Dr. Chandler about the birthing journey and maternal health by reading a quote from a column that you published earlier this year in the Arkansas Democrat Gazette to mark Maternal Health Awareness Day. You wrote, quote, "The stakes could not be higher. Each year, more than 35,000 women give birth in Arkansas. While most of these births result in happy memories and healthy babies, even one mother or baby who doesn't make it home due to a preventable cause is too many. These numbers underscore why consistent quality care before, during, and after pregnancy is critical to ensuring positive outcomes for mothers and babies." Dr. Chandler, thank you so much for joining our program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
So talk to us about what you meant in that quote.
You know, I have really come face to face to this as I've served on the Maternal Mortality Review Committee. And you read these cases and you're just like, oh, my goodness. You know, and we really do find that the majority of them were preventable in some form or fashion. And it's not always that the doctor did something wrong, the hospital did something wrong, the patient. I mean, there's this multifactorial And it's not like we're trying to put blame, but a lot of these things are preventable, could have been preventable in these cases. And it's not just mortality. It's also the morbidity. Moms who go home and they're not the same as when they came in. Hey, we're so grateful that they survived. But it really, our goal is we want healthy, as we say, kind of cliche, but healthy moms and healthy babies. So, I'm so excited about the direction that we're going, that we're really taking this seriously and making big changes.
Absolutely.
Transformative changes. So, yeah.
And we're going to get into that here a little bit deeper in just a moment. But let's start at the beginning of the birthing journey, pre-pregnancy. Arkansas does repeatedly rank poorly, unfortunately, on most national health indexes. And we know that many women in the state are already dealing with chronic disease and other health issues prior to getting pregnant. From your unique vantage point as a physician, as the Arkansas Surgeon General, how are Arkansans faring in general when it comes to their health?
Well, unfortunately, it's not very good right now. It's not very good when you look at the data and you compare, and I don't like comparing. I want us to compare to ourselves how we're getting better, but you know, you have to. That's part of it. But I was just looking at some data from U.S. health rankings, and it was like, you know, we're in the top five worst, I think. Now, we're not the worst. I think we're number two, but still, in chronic diseases. And that includes things like high blood pressure, stroke, diabetes, obesity, mental health issues. We're really not doing very well. And we have about 15% of our population who have three or more of these chronic diseases. So I think we are, you know, you look at numbers, we are getting better, but we are not doing well. And really, when you look at like chronic disease in the country, it's really kind of focused in the South, you know? And I think one of the things that contributes to that is if you look at the, I hate to, you know, I know this isn't popular to talk about, but hey, I talk about it. I talk about it to my patients too. Obesity is huge in our state as far as numbers wise. When we look at the national average, it's about 32%. That's BMI over 30. Now we're not even talking about overweight. But when you look at Arkansas, it's about 39%. Now we're not, again, we're not the worst, but we're right up there. And those things contribute to the other chronic diseases.
Let's focus on the obesity thing for just a second, because I think it is really important. 6 out of 10 new Arkansas moms had a BMI in the overweight or obese range. Once a woman becomes pregnant, talk to us a little bit about the obesity, diabetes, other forms of these chronic. How does it complicate efforts to improve maternal health outcomes?
Well, we know that, you know, obesity contributes to things like everybody can think about diabetes, maybe high blood pressure. High blood pressure can then lead to preeclampsia. Preeclampsia can lead to eclampsia or seizures. I mean, serious strokes, things like that. But not only that, it contributes to preterm birth, and then that contributes to infant mortality. So, but not only those things that we think about for chronic disease, and we do see in our population of pregnant women that diabetes is on the rise. I mean, women coming into pregnancy with type 2 diabetes, women developing that type 2 diabetes, or gestational diabetes, women having high blood pressure, that's higher than it was 10 years ago. And we see those numbers as far as even as obesity just gradually increasing with time. And so we have to turn that around. But not only that, people may not realize, but, you know, obesity contributes to a woman's risk of a C-section. It's about 1.6 to 2 times higher if a woman's obese, or now if she has developed gestational diabetes, shoulder dystocia is high, and that can lead to infant, in serious, serious cases, mortality, but at least morbidity in the infant too. So, I mean, we see how it severely contributes to that. So we need to come into the pregnancy as healthy as we can be. And I think if we overall improve our health in the state, we're going to see improvements in the maternal morbidity mortality.
And are we seeing the prevalence of chronic disease and in factors that we're talking about here related to obesity? Are we seeing these vary by region or rurality across the state? Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, I did take a look at that. And there's, and when you look at, we don't have a lot of data comparing regions. I was looking at some stroke data on that. That's on our, you know, health department website. And surprisingly, central Arkansas had a fairly high number even compared to, say, Southwest Arkansas, and one of the highest was in the northeast and in the eastern part of the state as far as stroke goes. But then you look at other parameters, and it changes around. But when you look at maternal mortality, that's kind of flipped around from time to time too, because it was significantly higher in the northwest part of the state. Well, then the last year's report was highest in the southeast and the southwest. I do think the Southeast, one of the things that you look at when you talk about, and we talked about hospital closures, I mean, I do think that the maternity deserts contribute, because we had three hospitals discontinue obstetric services since 2019 in the Southeast part of the state. But I can't really put my finger on and say, oh, this is one area. But in general, Central Arkansas and Northwest Arkansas have lower chronic disease.
Let's talk about the things that women can do
Before
getting pregnant that can increase their chances for a healthy delivery. We know one example, when women stop smoking. Data from the CDC shows that 19% of new Arkansas moms smoked cigarettes in the 3 months prior to pregnancy, which is three times the national average. Aside from that, talk to us, how do you talk to your patients, or, how do you talk about other steps that women can take before pregnancy to improve their chances of a healthy birthing journey?
Sure. And when you talk about smoking, I just want to add in, I think if we have any healthcare providers listening in, don't ever underestimate the power of you saying something, you asking, telling patient, I think you can do this. I would like to see you stop smoking. I just have to share a quick story. I remember years ago, a patient comes in and she was about 19 or 20 and she was smoking cigarettes. And I was like, you know, that could cause increased problems for you, either getting pregnant or having miscarriage rate or complications in pregnancy. I'd really like to see you quit smoking. She came back the next year. She had stopped smoking. And I said, oh, I'm so excited you quit smoking. And she said, well, you told me to. I'm like, okay, if it was that easy. And it's not always that easy.
Right.
But I do know, I've had multiple people tell me, so-and-so told me to do this. And so that's what I did. And we have programs at the health department to help with that. You know, Be Well Arkansas, and Be Well Baby. But so those are exciting things. But as far as what women can do, I really think every woman needs to have a wellness visit. We need to have our wellness visits every year. And we need to either see your obstetrician, your PCP. You can come to the health department for a wellness visit. And at those, you know, and you can consider it a preconceptual visit, but really it's just a wellness visit. Say, okay, what's my blood pressure? You know, you can check that other places too, but what's my blood pressure? Make sure it's 120 over 80 or less. Hey, do I have any thyroid problems? Do I have any anemia? Those are just routine screening tests that doctors will run, providers will run when you go to the doctor. Also looking for and making sure your vaccinations are up to date. Also, this is a big one in my book, and I think it's under evaluated, and that is prediabetes and diabetes. Now, because I think sometimes people wait until there's sugar in the urine or there's sugar, you know, the high blood sugars, but there is an online test called Do I Have Prediabetes? And it's put out by the CDC. And interestingly, it'll ask you about your family history, you know, about your gestational history, if you've had pregnancies before, and tells you whether or not you are high risk for prediabetes and if you should be screened with like a hemoglobin A1C. And I just did it to see what the questions were earlier today. I was kind of curious about that because I don't have prediabetes. I've been screened. However, because I have family history and because of my age and because I have high blood pressure, I'm telling my medical history here, but I was considered, even though, you know, like I said, I have a normal weight, but I was considered high risk possibly for prediabetes. Mm. So when people don't know, they think, oh, well, I'm normal weight, I'm healthy, I'm exercising, but you do not know. So we need to be getting screened for that as well. I didn't mention earlier, but I really want to talk about the importance of oral health. Listen, we have seen, I'm married to a dentist. My son's a dentist. You would think that I would have known this, but only up until maybe a couple years ago, I was asked to do a talk on maternal health and oral health. Started doing some research in it. Realize that if a woman comes into a pregnancy with periodontal disease or gingivitis, but more seriously periodontal disease, because most women are going to get some gingivitis because of hormones during pregnancy, but if it's more severe, they have a significantly higher incidence of preeclampsia and preterm labor, leads to preterm birth, leads to higher incidence of infant mortality, which we are ranked high in as well. So I'm wanting to really dig into that and make sure that women know. And you need to get treated when you're pregnant, and women can see the dentist when they're pregnant. But you need to come into the pregnancy with healthy oral health. Because once you're pregnant, if you have periodontitis, really the rates don't go down even if you're treated for preterm birth and preterm delivery and preeclampsia. But if you come into the pregnancy with better oral health, you're going to reduce that risk. And really, about 40%, some of the statistics show 40% of preterm birth those women do have periodontal disease. And then if you look at the incidence of neonatal and infant mortality, up to 75% of those cases are because of preterm birth, significantly preterm birth. So we need to do that. And it's, you know, doctors, a lot of times we think, hey, we deal with everything but the teeth.
Right.
And we think of, I think a lot of people think of dental health as really, let's have a pretty smile.
Yeah.
But it's so much more.
Yes.
Yes. Even the heart disease risk, inflammation in general. But yeah, that's something I really wanted to focus on and get the word out.
Governor Sanders and the state legislature, they have made significant steps over the past year and beyond to address the state's maternal health crisis. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us just in your conversations with women and moms around the state, because you have been so involved, you've been part of these stakeholder groups, I've seen you at almost every meeting, you're always up on the stage sharing your insight into this. Can you talk to us about some of those conversations that you've had around the state, but then also with some of your patients? Like, what has their response been?
What I've been hearing more of, and I've been going to some of the local health units too and hearing and asking questions, but I have heard more people saying, hey, I've found it easier to get on Medicaid. So I think the presumptive eligibility is really working, because I was hearing, yeah, it takes a while, or, you know, or I can't get seen until I've got my Medicaid set up. So I think people are really excited about that. I've heard some positive discussion about the unbundling of the payments. Mm-hmm. And I think, interestingly, I was just reading something on the in the news about even commercial payers are looking at going to that and throughout the country. So, and I think that's just because this bundled payment, where it's one payment, one size fits all, it's not really the best way. And I know people can get reimbursed for extra visits, but I think the unbundling. And then, two, when you do that, you can monitor better. When did they start prenatal care? How many visits did they have? I mean, I know that's part of some of the vital statistics, but I think that's going to help. And then people are interested in the doulas. Now, I mean, I'm talking to my colleagues who deliver babies, and they are seeing more women come in with doulas. And so I do think there's some excitement about that as well. And I'm excited about that.
If you were to look over the next 5-10 years, look in your crystal ball, what additional steps do you feel like we need to take, not, you know, state level, community level, county level, to continue to improve health outcomes for moms?
Well, some of the things that we need to continue to pursue, what we need to do, are increase the family medicine obstetric fellowships, surgical obstetric fellowships. And there's some real interest in this. The first one was started by UAMS at El Dorado, and they're graduating their first fellow, and they're going to accept two next year. So they hope to have two per year. I know there's interest in doing that at other places throughout the state. I don't think that's been started yet, but there's, I think we're going to see more of that. And I think the rural health transformation probably will feed into that to some degree also, I'm hoping. Another thing is the certified nurse midwives. Of course, that's another thing I think I didn't mention earlier, but, you know, there's some legislation on that passed last session where they can admit and discharge patients if they have hospital privileges. I don't deliver babies right now, but when I did, you know, there wasn't a lot of willingness, I think, unfortunately, I mean, to collaborate. I think that will be getting better. I think hospitals are more interested in that. I think other parts of the country, it's just routine. I have a lady that I used to work with that's in Atlanta, and she said, everybody here, all the OB doctors have certified nurse midwives that they work with. But there are some data that show that states that have higher certified nurse midwife participation and availability had better outcomes. And we do know, we talk about, you know, C-section rates can be lower. Now, I want to say lower risk populations are going to have lower C-section rates. So we have to consider that too. But also increase in breastfeeding after delivery. So I think UAMS is starting a new program. I think they'll start it this fall. They'll have, I think, 6 graduates. I talked to a stakeholder at one of the meetings. That's one thing I love about going to these meetings is you really get to meet people and what's going on in different parts of the state. But they are going to start a certified nurse midwife program in their school. So I think I'm excited about that, and they want to collaborate with other hospitals for the fellow, for the preceptorships and things like that. So I think we're going to see that, and I think that's really going to be super helpful.
There's been so much energy in this space over the last really few years. Mm-hmm. I feel hopeful that the needle will move, and hopefully we will get out of these bottom rankings.
Yes, and, you know, as an obstetrician gynecologist, I don't want to forget about us. I mean, I think we want to see more OBGYNs trained, too. So there's going to be we want to keep more doctors in the state of all kinds and specialties. So we have now 4 medical schools. So now we need to increase the residency training as well.
Is there anything else that I did not ask yet that you would like to share?
There's a couple things.
Yes,
there's
please.
A couple things. You know, one of the priorities when I first started in this position with the health department, we looked at some of the data of what's causing some of our problems, and we know early prenatal care and consistent prenatal care are important. So, yes, you need to start, and you need to keep coming. Come early and keep coming throughout the pregnancy. And so we looked at regions, you know, that had higher incidence of no prenatal care or late prenatal care. And, you know, that has been high in some areas in particular. But so we went to these regions and did some, you know, pilot studies. And what we have seen, and I don't know that it's just all because of what the health department's doing, but we have increased our maternity care from 54 health units in out of the 90-something that we have in the 75 counties up to 67. So we've increased by 25% the prenatal care. Now, we don't want to continue. We don't want to take over anybody else's. If you have a doctor and the patients can be seen by somebody else who's doing their obstetric care, great. But we want to be there for women. We want to be the entry for women so we can say, even if we don't provide it at that health unit, then we can refer you and help you find your resources. But the CDC recently put out a report that showed that the incidence of late or no prenatal care had increased to 78% nationally from 75%. But there were six states where actually that number went down. They had less no prenatal or late prenatal care, and Arkansas was one of the six states. So I was just super thrilled to see that we have actually improved, and we're one of the six states that are making that have made that improvement. We have a long way to go, but I'm real excited about that.
Dr. Chandler, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me. Thank you.
In just a moment, we'll hear from one of the people out there on the ground helping to prepare women in Arkansas's rural communities for healthy pregnancies. As we were just discussing with Dr. Chandler, one of the first steps toward improving maternal health outcomes in Arkansas is improving the health of Arkansas women before they get pregnant. Pre-pregnancy health education, planning, and access to contraceptives can help prevent unintended pregnancies, which have a greater risk of babies being born prematurely or at a low birth rate. In Arkansas, one out of three new mothers experience an unintended pregnancy. Making an impact in this space means reaching these women and having meaningful conversations wherever they are. In much of Arkansas, that means getting out in our rural communities. Kelly Conroy has focused on serving communities with limited access to care throughout her career, including her work with the Indian Health Service of the Navajo Nation and as a U.S. Peace Corps volunteer in Zambia. She's also worked with local public health departments in Colorado and Wyoming, where she oversaw family planning, immunization, and nurse home visitation programs. She currently serves as director of programs at the Arkansas Center for Women and Infants Health at UAMS, where she leads statewide mobile health initiatives and maternal child health programs, including prenatal and women's health services designed to reach rural and medically underserved populations. Ms. Conroy, thank you so much for joining us today. First, could you just help us understand the range of work taking place at the Arkansas Center for Women and Infants Health at UAMS and what your role is there?
Yeah. Thank you for having me, Sandra. I'm a senior director at the Arkansas Center for Women and Infants Health. And as you said, we are a part of UAMS. And our work is really primarily focused on pregnancy in the postpartum period and early infancy. And this is really a statewide effort to address some of the maternal mortality and infant mortality rates in our state. We know all about all of how that. And so really trying to improve outcomes of women and infants. And so that's a lot of the focus of our work. We have a lot of initiatives going on. A lot is, again, we have a proactive postpartum call center where we are calling women 5 to 10 days after they give birth to help address any postpartum concerns, because that is such a critical period in their pregnancy and postpartum period. And then we also provide infant supply boxes that go home with women after birth. Again, those are really to help provide some essential baby needs and really kind of take some of that weight off of women and families during that postpartum period. So a lot of our initiatives, again, are during that pregnancy and postpartum period. And then we're also trying to address care gaps that exist within the state of Arkansas. And so we do some of that utilizing mobile health units to provide mobile care across the state. A lot of that is focused primarily, again, for increasing access to prenatal care and contraceptive cares in some parts of the state where either that care doesn't exist or women have to travel really long distances to get that care. So we want to kind of close those gaps in care.
And we know that, you know, those are many of the challenges that a lot of new moms and pregnant women face is we live in a really rural state. You just mentioned the mobile health units. Can you talk to me a little bit more about that? You know, what does that effort look like as a whole? What has the response been? Can you tell us maybe a story of being in a community recently and what that was like?
Yeah, so we are using these mobile health clinics. They are mobile clinics on wheels. This is a primary focus of my work, and we are really bringing care to those communities, meeting women where they are, giving them access to care that may not exist close to their communities or close to home. And really, we are trying to help the women who have those largest barriers to accessing that care. So we know that the distance to access care in a lot of rural parts of our state can be 30 minutes, 60 minutes or more. So if they lack reliable transportation or transportation at all, that may not be, you know, conducive to attending prenatal appointments. And so, you know, if we can bring it to them and make it more convenient to them, that's our real goal. And so what that looks like is we bring a care team. So we bring the mobile unit. We can provide comprehensive prenatal and women's health care on that. But the care team also exists of it's a provider, typically a provider, a nurse, and then we utilize community health workers. And I think that's a key piece to our care as well. So because we know that their care is not just the clinical component, but it's also, you know, what it looks like within their community. So do they have access to food scarcity issues? Do they have access to essential items that they might need for pregnancy or infancy? Or do they need to get signed up with Medicaid or SNAP benefits? So those are the things that our community health workers can really help connect them with. So I think that's an important part of our mobile health as well, too. A lot of the areas that we currently serve are currently in Northwest Arkansas and Eastern Arkansas, but we are expanding statewide. So we're really, again, really trying to focus in on where are those gaps in care. So those maternal health deserts. And we've seen a really strong community response. What we hear a lot frequently from these women is, if you weren't here, we would not have gotten the care. So we know that we are helping address those gaps for a lot of women that don't have access to get to that care. And then we also really partner with a lot of community organizations that already exist. I mentioned the community health workers. We hire those from the communities that we're serving. So they have some lived experience. They understand those challenges that women in those communities face in accessing care and accessing resources. So they're a key component. And then working with those community organizations, they often provide like the space for us to bring the mobile unit and park it there. But then also helping connect them locally to additional resources that the women may need.
When we talk about pregnancy and the birthing journey, it's often easy to focus on that first pregnancy. But we know that many moms will go on to have more children. How do you discuss the role of intentional birth spacing?
This is an ongoing conversation. You know, we really believe that this is not a one-time conversation. I think there's a lot of belief that, you know, you have a conversation about contraception or planning a pregnancy at that postpartum visit that may occur, you know, after birth, but we know that about 50% or more of women don't attend the postpartum visit. So We start really early. We start as soon as we see them during pregnancy. We want to start having those conversations. Part of that conversation is we ask usually one of two questions. It's very simple, but we ask, are you planning to become pregnant in the next 12 months? Or would you like to talk about birth control or contraceptives with the provider today? So either one of those questions really lets the woman, you know, have some space to have conversations that are important to her and really give some thought to those questions. Are you planning to become pregnant in the next 12 months? So, you know, if they say yes, we can go down that road of like, how can we help you and support you in having healthy pregnancy? If they're not sure or if they're an absolute no, let's have that conversation. Have you thought about, you know, how to prevent an unplanned pregnancy? And so we talk about healthy birth spacing, and especially for women that may have a lot of challenges as far as, you know, transportation, financial considerations, chronic health conditions. We want to make sure that they're their healthiest when they have their pregnancy. So, you know, talking about that healthy birth spacing that can occur and how we can help support them during that. That's, you know, part of that intentionality is normalizing that conversation. When women have, you know, encounters with a healthcare provider, it doesn't have to be an OBGYN. It can be their primary healthcare provider. It can be the community health worker that they work with on a regular basis. But, you know, providing some space to kind of give some thought to like how they feel about that and like, what are some steps or where can they go to get more information to support them in making a, you know, a good decision for themselves and their families. And not waiting until that postpartum period. We bring up that conversation frequently.
You touched on the conversations that you have with many of these women in our state's rural communities. If one of those women was listening now, if you just had a few minutes with her, what would you want her to know?
I want her to know that she's not alone, that there's a lot of support out there, even in our most rural areas. So it's really just knowing where to go for resources and support and, you know, making sure that you have individuals that you trust and have these conversations with and getting reputable information on whatever topic it is. Is it around pregnancy? If it's around preventing a pregnancy. So is that, you know, a trusted healthcare provider? Is it your OBGYN? Is it that community health worker that you work with? We know that there's a lot of misconceptions and myths and some non-reputable sources of health information out there. So really letting women know that they're not alone. There's a lot of assistance available for them and that, you know, where they can reach out when they need more information.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Ms. Conroy. I enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
Kelly Conroy holds a Master of Public Health from the Colorado School of Public Health and a Bachelor of Science in Nursing from Johns Hopkins University. For more insight and a closer look at the data we have on pre-pregnancy risk factors in Arkansas, I am joined in the studio by Izzy Montgomery. Izzy is our senior health policy analyst here at ACAI, who has led much of the work to transform that complex data into meaningful information to help shape the conversation around maternal and infant health, including the Healthy Birthing Journey infographic, which is the foundation of this podcast series. Izzy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We've been discussing the importance of women's health prior to pregnancy and how to improve the health of these women. Of course, I know you've served as chair of the Chronic Disease Forum, and we know that chronic conditions such as obesity and diabetes can have a huge impact on outcomes for new moms. Let's dive a little bit into the data. What does the data tell us about this and the impact that these chronic conditions can have on new moms? And then let's talk about what we can do to improve these issues.
So one of the clearest findings from the data is how common metabolic risk factors are before pregnancy. In 2021, we saw that 60 out of 100 Arkansas moms had a BMI in the overweight or obese range, and that was before pregnancy. We also know from some other data sources that 6% of women who are birthing age in Arkansas have diabetes, and that's compared to about 3.5% of women nationally. So these conditions matter because obesity and diabetes increase the risk of complications during pregnancy and even after delivery. Some examples increase the risk of gestational diabetes, hypertensive disorders like preeclampsia, and then they also affect infant health outcomes like infants being born at a low birth weight, higher risk for preterm birth, and an increased risk for NICU admission. When many women enter into pregnancy with these underlying conditions, it increases the overall risk profile for pregnancies in Arkansas compared to states especially with lower rates of chronic disease. And then from a policy perspective, this means that pregnancy can't be the starting point for improving maternal health. We have to address chronic disease through regular engagement with primary care providers, provide nutrition and physical activity supports, and also increase access to behavioral health services before pregnancy. And that's needed to improve outcomes for both moms and babies.
I mean, obviously, we know access to care is another issue. Can we talk a little bit about what the data is showing us around healthcare visits, how many new moms have been engaging with the health system prior to pregnancy?
So in 2021, 62 out of 100 Arkansas moms reported having a healthcare visit in the year before pregnancy, which means nearly 4 in 10 had not seen a provider during that time. That matters because organizations like the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, or ACOG, really emphasize the importance of preconception counseling. These visits give women an opportunity to talk to their provider about things like chronic conditions, the medications they're taking, their nutrition, mental health, and vaccinations before they even begin pregnancy. So overall, improving engagement with the healthcare system before pregnancy can play a really important role in improving these outcomes.
We obviously talk a lot about insurance. What do we know? What does the data show for insured and uninsured rates for birthing age women prior to getting pregnant?
You know, the data show that insurance coverage plays a big role in whether women are connected to care before pregnancy. In 2021, 14 out of 100 Arkansas moms reported being uninsured 1 month before pregnancy. Once women become pregnant, that number dropped to about 1 out of 100, largely because of pregnancy Medicaid coverage.
Another challenging issue, this is usually brought up as a major concern in the postpartum period, is depression. But we also see some concerning numbers before pregnancy in Arkansas.
Yeah, and this is actually one of the most important findings in the data, in my opinion. In 2021, 26 out of 100 Arkansas moms reported depression in the 3 months prior to pregnancy, compared with 25 during pregnancy and about 20 in the postpartum period. What that tells us is that maternal mental health challenges are beginning before pregnancy and not just after delivery. So this postpartum depression, of course, is critically important to address. However, if we just focus on depression in the postpartum period, we're missing part of that picture. Untreated mental health conditions can affect prenatal care engagement with their providers, their stress levels, and just their overall well-being. So to me, this data really emphasizes the importance of integrating mental health care into primary care and women's health services more broadly, and also making sure women can continue accessing that care during and after delivery.
Thank you so much for diving into this data, Izzy. You've done a great job over the last several years on this subject. Listeners can find our 100 Arkansas Moms infographic on pre-pregnancy risk factors and trends on how they've shifted over the years on our maternal and infant health topic page. You can find that at achi.net/maternal-infant-health. In the next episode, we move forward to the second stop along the healthy birthing journey, where we'll focus on prenatal care. State Representative Erin Pilkington will join us to discuss presumptive Medicaid eligibility and steps at the state level to ensure an application period doesn't become a barrier to moms initiating care as soon as possible. Dr. Nirvana Manning of UAMS will share recent work to increase access to care for moms in Arkansas communities. And in Northeast Arkansas, Emily McGee of St. Bernard's will tell us about their maternal Life 360 programs and how they're expanding care and support for new moms beyond the doctor's office. This program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Institute for Healthcare Management Foundation. The Healthy Birthing Journey podcast is produced by Joshua Cook at the Arkansas Center for Health Improvement. You can find more episodes, our infographic outlining the 9 points on a healthy birthing journey, and more analyses of maternal and infant health data in Arkansas on our website, achi.net. Thank you for listening.